your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab in the middle of it. Right on schedule.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We have quite an interesting setup for you, a lineup of audio clips of different interviews and such that we think will really get you some more insight about what's really going on. And this deep state problem that we have was back during the campaign, Trump's campaign for presidency. They weaponized our government, and they used fake news left and right and tried to paint him with a picture of Russian collusion and so forth. So we're going to pick up towards the end of this hour. We're going to bring up what Katie Couric had to say about Ruth Bader Ginsburg and also what she had to say about deprogramming the Republicans. But first, this is a really good interview with General Flynn had with Tucker Carlson, and it gives you an insight of what's really going on. So here we go now with General Flynn.
So for years, you have heard people on television dismiss General Michael Flynn as crazy, a conspiracy nut, as unqualified. He is, of course, none of those things. The opposite is true in every case, and it's possible that's why they took him out.
The American people, they saw through this from the very beginning, because it wasn't about Mike Flynn. It wasn't even about Donald Trump. It was about them. And when the left and the media started to attack the presidency of the United States of America, the American people saw that, hey, this is an attack on us.
Yes.
And thank God for me, because, and for my family and I, because the American people actually came to our aid. So in a funny way, the more quiet I was, because I just made the decision that I wasn't going to say anything until this whole mess was over with. But the more that they beat on me, the more that the media came and attacked me and called me all sorts of names, people dug more and more into my life and dug more and more into everything that surrounded what was happening. And it actually became a huge stain on the justice system in the United States of America. And this will, I'm not certain, Tucker, if this stain can ever be cleaned. I really don't, because you're talking about the National Security Advisor of the United States of America to the President of the United States. And it's an extraordinary, extraordinary assault on frankly, everything that we believe in this
country. On democracy itself. Yeah. And you have to ask, and this is ultimately what made me interested in your case, is why did they single you out? So this is a brand new administration. Yeah. I think the number is about 3,000 appointees or higher at the beginning of every administration for all kinds of different jobs. National Security Advisor is a top job, of course, but there are other big jobs.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't go after those guys. They went after you with real intensity from the very beginning. Now, the two things they said about you were that you were crazy and that you were dishonest.
My case and my situation is really a microcosm of what is happening in the larger enterprise of the United States of America right now. I mean, the takeover of our system of government by a few to rule the many, so to speak. They had to get rid of people like me because, as the National Security Advisor, I'm responsible for, you know, for everything. I mean, for pretty much everything in terms of the security system of our country, and then the principal advisor to the President of the United States. And you're a cabinet position. You're in a cabinet position appointed by the president, not necessarily, you don't have to be nominated to the Senate or any of that kind of stuff.
Right.
You don't have to go through all that. So what they had to do is they had to figure out a way to get to me and to describe me in a way that made it sound like, okay, he's just a crazy guy. We, you know, all these bad things that he's done in his career. And I'm like saying to myself, wait a second. I mean, you look at my career and it's really a pretty stellar career. I'm proud of it.
Well, if you're crazy, why would you work for Barack Obama
twice.
running the Defense Intelligence
Agency? Twice Barack Obama appointed me for two different positions, two three-star positions, and twice I was confirmed by the Senate, fully confirmed, 100% confirmed by the Senate. So they have to look at every single aspect of your life. And that was what we've learned. So this is all public. So if you really, people really, really wanted to dig into the case against Mike Flynn and all of the filings and all the things that have come out. Even now, we still see stuff coming out now with this Sussman indictment and some of the other things that I think that Durham is actually is going to probably start to look at. I think it's fascinating. And I think what you learn is that we have two separate governments. We have the one that actually gets elected and goes into office. And then you have a government inside of Washington, D.C., that operates under no rules, no authorities other than their own or who's ever in charge of their
organization. Sounds like that government was still controlled by Barack Obama.
Yeah, and I would say that's to a degree is what we're operating with today. So when people talk about the deep state, and I've heard a lot of people talk about the deep state and the deep state this, the deep state that, the deep state, I don't really describe the deep state as a group of politically, of Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer or some of the people that are elected. They become part of it, but they're not really the deep state. The deep state in this country are the bureaucrats and particularly the organizations that run the security apparatus. So when Eisenhower used to talk about, and he warned us, and I think in his final speech when he was departing as the president, he warned us about the military-industrial complex, and that was back in, 1960. So when Eisenhower warned us about the military-industrial complex, if you fast forward to today, 2021, you can add a component to that. And the component that I would add is the security state component to the military-industrial complex, because the security state of this country has grown probably by five times in the last 25 to 30 years. So when you think about, and I'll just use, I'll use the Defense Intelligence Agency to give some people perspective. In the early 2000s, so prior to 9/11, DIA was around 3,000 people. When I took it over in only about 10, 11 years later, in 2012, I took it over, it was upwards of close to 20,000 people. So it had 17,000 employees, and then we had about another 3,000 or 4,000 contractors in various shapes and forms. So in a 10-year period of time, and it really was 9/11, probably was the impetus behind some of this. But I think what happened was, over time, this security state complex really joined with this military-industrial complex that Eisenhower talked about. And the dangers now that we face is we have that security state complex are all of these intelligence community agencies and activities that we have, right, that we've heard so much about, 16, 17, whatever you want that number to be today. And then who actually is in charge of them, and then what authorities or what things that they're able to do. I mean, you know this. You've lived this by them monitoring your phone calls, right? And you talked about this only a few months ago where it was like, if they can do, I mean, they were monitoring my phone calls with no warrant. They were just monitoring them because they could. And so when we talk about the deep state, it doesn't really even take somebody from the White House to say, go do it. Although in my case, somebody from the White House did actually direct it. And it's both in terms of a Barack Obama or a Joe Biden, because they had that infamous meeting on the, I think it was the 5th of January in 2017, where Biden talked about the Logan Act, which was another one of these crazy things, you know. And I know you've talked about that in time. So So this deep state complex, this security state complex, is something that the American people are now just beginning to get a taste of, staff, because they control what gets written into a bill, these bills that are 2,000 pages, right? So they not only know what these politicians are up to in their personal lives, they also are controlling what gets put into these bills.
Come on. So you're describing an autonomous government within our government.
Yeah, so I say there's like two governments. We're dealing.
But you're not overstating it. I mean, if they're controlling their own funding, then I mean, like they exist outside the democratic process.
Right. That's right. And I'm not overstating it. And they know exactly what I'm talking about.
So that's why they wanted to.
See, they mobilized all of the media, the mainstream media, against General Flynn and also against Trump. They did not want General Flynn to go into the White House as National Security Advisor. So they got rid of him early on, see. And it just turned out he's a fine person. But anyway, next we're going to air an interview that Kudlow had with Robert O'Brien, National Security Advisor and a former. And it gives us some really good information on what's going on right now about Huawei and also Taiwan. We're going to get some input from a really top security advisor, Robert O'Brien, being interviewed by Kudlow. And Kudlow bringing out some really fine programming. So here we go with that interview.
I now bring in my friend, distinguished former National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien, about Huawei and the Taiwan-China story. But, Robert, I think, you know, the Journal has alerted us. Huawei has been hobbled, humbled. They're not making any money. Their market is dried up. They're out of the 5G game for all intents and purposes outside of China. And folks aren't even buying their smartphones. And you were an important player in all that. You knocked them off their perch.
Well, you'll recall, Larry, when I took office and came to see you, one of the very first things we talked about was Huawei. And the experts were telling us you can't stop Huawei. They control 5G or they're going to control 5G all over the world. You can't stop it. You'll have to figure out a way to work around it, do enhanced encryption. But Huawei is going to control 5G. And by controlling 5G, they're going to control every bit of data that goes up to the cloud and down to the cloud. Worldwide, that means your grandma's medical records, your kid's social media, your bank statements, all government information, that would all have traveled on the Huawei 5G backbone, gone up to the cloud, and the Chinese Communist Party would have had access to all of it. And we made the decision, and President Trump directed us, to stop it and to make sure that we couldn't. And folks said it couldn't be done, but you and I spent a lot of time on the road, traveling around the world, even during COVID. We spent a lot of time on the phone. The president spent a lot of time on the phone with world leaders. And we got it stopped. And what we did is we protected people's data. We protected their privacy. We protected our government secrets. Just a tremendous accomplishment, something I know you're proud of. I'm proud of, and we had a great team working with us. Secretary Pompeo was involved.
Yeah, Pompeo was great.
On his team.
Pompeo was great. And, Pottinger was great.
We had a great team.
Yeah. I mean, by stopping Huawei, Robert, we essentially, I won't say stopped, but we sure slowed down China around the world. Because this was a big thing, you know, Huawei was going to lead China, and they're going to run the world, and they're going to run all the phones and all the 5G and 6G. No, not true. Not anymore.
They were going to have every single piece of data that went from the earth up through up to the cloud would have gone right through the Communist mm-hmm. Party of China, and mm-hmm. And we stopped it, and wasn't easy, and everyone said it couldn't be done, but we got it done, and you and your shop were critical to that, Larry. So you know. The American people owe you a debt of gratitude.
Well, and you likewise, and also Pompeo. So let's now we have this China-Taiwan crisis, 150 flights in their identification zone. And I'm reading in the papers, maybe you can corroborate this and talk to it. There's a couple of dozen special ops forces now on the ground in Taiwan to advise them to have stronger military. So that's good. I hope they keep building that up. You have outlined the porcupine strategy, the so-called porcupine strategy to stop China. And I'm also reading the CIA has some kind of special China mission center. Now, I wish they had woken up to that earlier, but better late than never. So what's happening here? How big a crisis is this going to be?
Well, number one, Taiwan, our democratic ally, our friends, the geopolitically strategic island in the Pacific, the critical island in the Pacific, is under threat. It's under severe threat. Admiral Davidson, the former commander of Indo-PACOM, has a window. He says once the Beijing Olympics are over, he doesn't think that the Chinese will endanger the Olympic Games, but once that's over, through about 2025, is a period of maximum danger when the Chinese might decide to invade Taiwan. And that would open up the entire Pacific to the PLA Navy. With Taiwan open, the Chinese Navy could flood out in the Pacific, and it could threaten all the second island chain, American territories like Guam and Samoa, our states of Hawaii. I'm out here in California, our West Coast. There'd be no cork in the champagne bottle, so to speak, of the Pacific to deter the Chinese from running rampant. But number two, from an economic point of view, we're going through a terrible supply chain crunch. It's almost impossible to get a new car because of the lack of chips. Most advanced chips, as you know, are made in Taiwan. Mm-hmm. And we're building some chip factories. Again, that was one of your initiatives and something we supported strongly at the NSC during the Trump administration. Let's get Intel and let's get some of the other big companies to build chip factories in Arizona. If we have to subsidize them, which is normally an anathema to conservatives like you and me, we've got to do it because we have to be able to make the most advanced chips in America. Right now, those are made in Taiwan. Can you imagine if China did to Taiwan what it's done to Hong Kong or Tibet, mm-hmm. or Western China, took it over, shut down the supply chain, shut down the ability to buy chips, and had that kind of leverage over us? It'd make the Huawei situation look small. So this is a real threat, and it's a real danger to the United States.
You know, I've got to get Wilbur Ross, former Commerce Secretary, who was very instrumental in all these. I got to get him back on the show to talk about it, because he was a great player. So, Robert O'Brien, in your judgment, are the Bidens being tough enough on this China issue with Taiwan?
Well, look, I think most of the Trump policies have stayed in place, and I think that's a credit to the Biden folks. I think we need to give them credit where credit's due, and they've maintained the Trump policies. We need to make sure that there's no backsliding from those policies, that we remain very strong friends of Taiwan. I saw the newspaper reports like you did, and I want to be careful about how I comment on this. I'm only going to comment on the newspaper reports of these Marines and special operators being in Taiwan. But if those reports are true, Marines are expert in amphibious landings, and so you'd understand why they were there to help advise the Taiwanese on how to resist an amphibious landing from China. Special operation forces are expert in helping counterinsurgencies and helping native forces stop an attacking force. So those would make sense. We talked about in our op-ed to Alex Gray, my former chief of staff and business partner who you have on your show regularly, wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal and said, look, we need to get anti-aircraft missiles to the Taiwanese. We need to make sure they've got the anti-ship missiles necessary to protect them, sea strike, sea mines, all things necessary to deter the Chinese, because right now the Chinese are bullying Taiwan like we haven't seen since maybe Kwame and Matsu back in the late 1950s, early 1960s. And, you know, they sent over scores and scores of aircraft, military combat aircraft, to harass the Taiwanese. So Taiwan's under threat. America's a friend to our democratic people around the world, and especially in Taiwan, and we need to continue to be their friend and help them turn into that porcupine to deter the Chinese from doing something that could plunge the world into a war. I mean, that would be a very bad mistake for the Chinese to invade Taiwan. Frankly, it'd be bad for China. So hopefully we want Taiwan to look like so difficult to swallow for the Chinese that they decided it's not worth it, that the juice isn't worth the squeeze.
Ambassador Robert O'Brien, thank you. Great narrative.
Great to be with you, Larry.
We're in real dangerous times right now, and we've got to start paying attention to what, our president, Biden, is doing. And he's really made some basic mistakes, big ones. And even Robert Gates, former national security advisor and so forth, out of A&M, in fact, he's president of A&M at one time, has said that Biden could not make a good national foreign security or foreign policy decisions. So here we have an interview here that will really tell us something about even additional problems that, we have about this pandemic. Mike Adams is interviewing Dr. Artis about these deaths and what they attributed to these deaths of vaccine victims, vaccine injured victims. But this is very important, so listen closely.
We are covering breaking news right now today here on Infowars.com with our special guest, Dr. Brian Artis. I'm Mike Adams, the health ranger of naturalnews.com, stepping in here for this segment. We have breaking news. Dr. Peter McCullough was distributing this today, and it is astonishing. Dr. Artis is with us, and I want to thank you, Dr. Artis, for sharing these data. If I'm reading this correctly, and I was just parsing it over the break, if I'm reading this correctly, and please correct me if I'm wrong, it looks like when females have a breakthrough infection after vaccination, that 43% of those women die. Is that what these data are showing?
That's exactly what you're reading. So they actually do a graph of it here in this report. They actually evaluated 7,178 deaths of breakthrough cases. 43% of the females did die within that group after having been fully vaccinated. And there's the graph right there. You see it. Now, for people over 65 years, so this is male and female, this was just put up on the CDC's website, published October 12th, just a few days ago. Look at the number of deaths for people older than 65. That's your Medicare age group.
The producers are working on getting that graphic up here. So, well, I'm not sure that's the right graph. They're working on it. So keep describing the graph you're talking about. I'm looking at it. You're looking at it. It's real. It's from CDC.gov. But go ahead. Just have a little patience with that.
Oh, no, you're fine. So the total amount of deaths they're evaluating for, they want to know what are the percentages of the individuals that were in this group of deaths that were considered breakthrough cases that were reported to the CDC. Of that 7,178 people that died after being fully vaccinated, females represented 43% of the total deaths. Of the people that were over 65 years old, that number represents 85 of all of those reported in the 7,179 group of people that died after being fully vaccinated. That's a disturbing number. And if you haven't seen it yet, if you go to the right side, they talk about a group of 24,000 evaluated breakthrough cases for people fully vaccinated that were reported to the CDC. It's on this chart. 57% of them. Nope, it's 67% of all of them were older than 65. So is this helping our Medicare age group? I don't think so. You're vaccinating them, and the majority of them are being hospitalized as a result. And then the percentages of death of those from breakthrough cases after full vaccination for 65 years and older. The profile is 85% died. That's what the numbers represent, are those over 65 years old. We should be protecting our elderly.
So. Thank you for clarifying that. Perhaps I didn't state it exactly correctly at first. It's not that 43% of women who got infections died, but rather of those who died, 43% were women and 57% were men, assuming that gender is binary. Right?
Yeah, this actual report is reviewing a subset group that were supplied to the CDC that they were evaluating on of 7,100 people who died after being fully vaccinated. And in that group, those represented 43% were females, but 85% of the death totals for breakthrough cases in this group were those older than 65. Now, I don't know if you've seen this, Mike Adams, but you're in Texas like I am. We have actually been pulling using multiple CMS database whistleblowers, using Tom Renz, who's actually acquired these individuals. We actually published and put up on a screen on Saturday, Peter McCullough and I were there speaking at an event in Frisco, Texas, just for Texas. The CMS database shows that for those 65 years and older, from the time they got the COVID-19 shots in 28 days post the shot, I'm looking at the graph here. I've emailed it to you guys. If they can put it up, great. But deaths for Texans alone is 6,558 Medicare age group people in Texas who have died within 28 days of the COVID-19 shots. That's appalling, looking at the vaccine campaigns of old that have been removed when only 23 to 53 people died across the entire country. You're looking at the graph right now on the screen. This is ridiculous. I also have to tell you, this list of adverse events that you see on this chart, when we went into the CMS database, they excluded anyone who had any of these issues in their medical record already stated before getting the shots. Medicare reporting is not voluntary. This is CMS data. I supplied all of this with Thomas Renz just a week and a half ago to Senator Bob Hall in Texas to get this to the legislature during this special sessions. And he was with me.
This is extraordinary. And I believe Thomas Renz has put out these data for multiple states. So we have much more than Texas. There's also California and other states. And as you just stated, these symptoms or diagnoses appear to be caused by the vaccine themselves. And notice that on that list, if you could put it back up to the crew there, there's paralysis. You know, how do you explain paralysis as just a spontaneous thing happening? No, this is caused by the vaccine. Look at the diseases. It's Bell's palsy. There's another neurological condition. Of course, embolisms and blood clots are highly expected. But look, myocardial infarction and so on and so forth. But you know, paralysis. How can anybody look at this and not realize what's going on, Dr. Artis?
Yeah, just so you know, the paralysis is the most disturbing thing to a lot of us. These are people who in their medical history in CMS databases have never had it in their medical record that they had parts of their body paralyzed. Now, you've got these shots going out into the Medicare age group. Remember, this is just Medicare age group for Texas, not those 15 years old and older that they're doing right now. But people who have never been paralyzed before, there's over 1,700 Texans, 65 years and older now, who now are paralyzed or parts of their body are paralyzed. You have over 3,200 people who have no history of cardiac arrest or myocardial infarction, which is a blood clot causing a heart attack. None of that's in their medical history until 28 days, within 28 days of their COVID-19 shots. But nonetheless, you have 6,500 dead Texans in those nine states that Thomas Renz has been able to accumulate data for. This, I cannot stand.
These data, by the way, I remember reviewing this. These data are not that recent. The real numbers today are far worse than this. Are you aware of what date that these data are sourced from?
Yeah, these were actually done up until September, like, 15th of last month, because that's when we first put the CMS on this to get the data.
Okay. All right. So there's at least a couple, almost a month of additional deaths and paralysis that will eventually be added to this. And part of the problem here is the data lag time is making it so that the obvious effects are not so obvious to everyone yet. But you've been tracking this. You're plotting the linear progression of this. As the immune systems are destroyed progressively week after week, these symptoms are getting reported in larger numbers week after week. So again, I don't know about you, Dr. Artis, but I think even if all vaccines were stopped right now, we're looking at a vaccine holocaust across the world. It's already baked in.
Mike Adams, I've called this the greatest genocide in American known history, starting with May 1st, 2020's memo by Anthony Fauci for the use of remdesivir only against all or with every hospitalized COVID-19 patients. Mike, we're at 740,000 dead Americans considered dead from COVID-19. I actually blame 90% of all those deaths on remdesivir poisoning, known to cause acute kidney failure, liver failure, and upwards of 30% of everybody you put that drug into for 5 to 10 days only. And that's the recommended treatment protocol. We're not the only ones that know this is occurring. I've just been in the media nonstop talking about it. Now you're looking at possibly 150,000 just in the Medicare group across all 50 states deaths right now for nine states we have completed on data review. It's over 31,000 confirmed dead within 28 days of the shots for the 65-year and older group for these nine states. When you multiply that times five, it's going to be up at 150,000 minimum.
Oh, yeah. Look, I've interviewed sources who believe we're already over 500,000 deaths from vaccines alone. That doesn't even count the remdesivir deaths. And those are credible, plausible numbers, by the way, not just pie-in-the-sky numbers. But look, did you ever think, that, let's say 2 years ago in your life, that you would be here today talking about coordinated medical genocide in the United States of America?
No, I never thought I was going to do this at all. I actually sold my practice 3 years ago after running it for 15 years, and I thought I was done. And I just went off to make nutritional products. It wasn't until an ill-advised protocol in February, the first week of February before COVID hit Texas in 2020, that they killed my father-in-law with ill-advised protocols using vancomycin that causes acute kidney failure in a percentage of people. That's exactly how they killed him in 9 days. I called them out on all their stuff on day 6 and 7. They had me escorted out of the hospital, only to find out 3 months later an ill-advised protocol already known to be dangerous to the majority of people given that drug in Ebola, an Ebola trial, and then 30% of all patients given in COVID-19 by Gilead, their own cohort study in March 2020. When I found it confirmed 31% of everyone they gave that drug to for 5 to 10 days, it caused acute renal failure and multiple organ failure. Never in my life did I anticipate trying to warn the entire world against an evil agenda put in place by our federal health agencies and our hospital administrators. No.
Give us your website, Dr. Artis. We're almost out of time. Where can people find you?
Go to thedrartisshow.com. Put in your email. We have a COVID resources there. I have patient advocacy information to help you get someone to stand in for you to protect your loved ones in hospitals that are criminally kidnapping your loved ones and murdering them with ill-advised protocols.
All right.
Stay tuned.
Thank you, Dr. Artis. Thank you for watching today. Infowars.com.
Very, very good breaking news about how dangerous these vaccines have been. And, I advise everybody to be very careful. And I don't recommend any of the vaccine, period. But anyway, coming up next is what Katie Couric had to say. It's coming out now. And let me just lay this out a second. It's what happened was they weaponized government against Trump. And when the alternative press got onto it, they started characterizing what the mainstream media had done is fake news because it became obvious. But what happened after that was January 6th was a mechanism that the far left could use and start blanket categorizing that any followers of Trump were fake news. And they started cutting people off and eliminating them from the social networks a year or two earlier than that. And then they started turning around and calling the alternative press fake news. See, to falsify what they were trying to do. The alternative press was trying to bring the truth to the American public, but they just couldn't get there. Now, Katie Couric, who is a member of a commission, a newly founded commission at the Aspen Institute. It's a commission on information disorder. It announces the full member list, and Prince Harry is on there with her. Katie Couric is co-chairman with Chris Krebs and Rashad Robinson. So she's on this committee at the Aspen Institute and putting together propaganda, what it is, and to take down the alternative press and eliminate them totally without giving them a voice. So we've got the Second Amendment here, the First Amendment and the Second Amendment that are under attack by her. So here we go with the report on what Katie Couric from The Hill, what she's all about in her editing of this Ruth Bader Ginsburg interview to protect us, because Kaepernick, Ruth Bader Ginsburg didn't like what Kaepernick did on that taking a knee. And she said that in the interview. But Katie Couric, I left it on the cutting floor. So here we go with this interview.
Former Today Show host Katie Couric has admitted to cutting quotes out of an interview with Ruth Bader Ginsburg that she did back in 2016. Where the SCOTUS judge said that kneeling during the national anthem shows a, quote, contempt for a government that has made it possible for their parents and grandparents to live a decent life. Social media users were outraged that Couric chose to withhold this from the public to protect Ginsburg on the Supreme Court, but she openly shared the moral dilemma in her new book.
Joining us now to discuss this is the host of the Katie Halper Show on YouTube, Katie Halper, as well as Useful Idiots. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And your new episode is out with yours truly on it. Everybody should go check that out.
A little cross promotion.
There you go.
Yeah. Conflict of interest. We disclosed it, so there you go.
Yeah, it's disclosed. Yeah. There you go. Transparency is the best disinfectant.
Katie Couric could learn from.
Right, except she finally, and this is a thing that bothers me about some of these admissions that people make later in their career, is they only make them when they're then selling a book. It's
yeah,
like,
exactly.
So you wanted to, you know, behave unethically in real time, then you want to own up to it years later, but you want to be paid for owning up to it. What was your read when you heard this? Because when she aired the interview, RBG did get criticism because she aired like half of her comments, which were egregious
right.
enough, but she kept out the most egregious elements of it.
Right. So she did say, first of all, I thought the question was really stupid. She asked her if athletes were within their rights to exercise these actions, referring to Kaepernick and others taking the knee. I don't know why that's a question. I mean, isn't that obvious? Isn't that basic?
Apparently it was a good question because it got a great answer. I mean, a great newsworthy
answer. Yeah, great newsworthy answer.
But she just stumbled into it. Yeah.
Yeah. So then Ginsburg, in a very kind of get off my lawn, with a lot of get off my lawn energy, said that it showed contempt for a government that had made it possible for their parents and grandparents to live a decent life. Now, she did keep in the piece that she said it was dumb. But I do think that her cutting it is an interesting decision. And what had happened, by the way, is that Ginsburg people had reached out and said she had misspoken and asked for that part of it to be removed. And then Katie Couric, you know, suffering this crisis, which I guess she didn't really deal with until years later, while, as you said, pushing her own book. So it was a lucrative crisis, I guess, reached out to two Davids. I don't know if that's her thing, to reach out to two people with the same first name. But she reached out to David Westin, who is the former head of ABC, and she reached out to David Brooks. And David Westin said that she's on the Supreme Court. People should hear what she thinks. David Brooks, however, said that she was elderly and probably didn't understand the question. Now, what's interesting about that is that David Brooks himself engaged in a conflict of interest. I don't know if viewers know about this, but he had to resign from his paid position at the Aspen Institute. The Aspen Institute is, you know, one of its contributors is Facebook, and he would report on Facebook without disclosing this. So then the New York Times, you know, put disclosures in the pieces where he was talking about Facebook and this other project called Weave. But of course, he shouldn't have been doing that in the first place. And then he stayed on as a volunteer at the Aspen Institute. So obviously, there's still going to be a lack of, like, objectivity when it comes to reporting on yeah. Facebook and if the Aspen Institute comes up in the Aspen Institute. So I think it's telling that that's who she sought advice from and that that's whose advice she followed. I also think it's interesting, by the way, I was just looking at the article and her book a little bit. She really threw Ashley Banfield under the bus. So I'm now a big Ashley Banfield fan.
I do not care for Katie Couric. I think she's wildly unethical. I remember there was a gun documentary she was involved in that a lot of the people who were interviewed complained that their quotes had been misrepresented. Hmm. So this is not. So and also I that explanation that. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is too old to understand the question, isn't she?
And maybe she shouldn't be on the court.
Right, exactly. Wait, what?
Yeah.
I mean, that's certainly newsworthy. And I find, look, I don't probably like both of you. You know, I don't have any problem with the Colin Kaepernick kneeling. I don't agree with the right. get off my lawn sentiment. But you know what? There are millions of people in the country who feel exactly the way she did. It's not like, it's like she didn't like say the N-word in conversation or something. It wasn't like radioactively controversial, which is the way I guess Couric and the people she consulted and also the people who spoke then later on behalf of RBG all took it, which it like clearly is not.
Right. I mean, I think that it's interesting because, I mean, what's interesting about the point you just made is that she did leave in her saying it was dumb and disrespectful, but then took that other part out. And, you know, something I want to also mention is that so she also thought that it was the comments were unworthy of a crusader for equality. That's what she said. So, again, this isn't really journalism. I mean, this is just kind of like turns that into a puff piece. And she's like fangirling out with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And then she doesn't want to put in anything that she thinks that certain of her fans who are like-minded fans will be offended by.
Yeah, a lot of the transformation of RBG into this kind of like pop culture icon celebrity type figure was I think very unhealthy. And she is certainly worthy of appreciation for being this very important figure and
right.
and she I certainly deserves a lot of positive coverage, but it kind of went like several steps beyond that into like she's right. She should be portrayed as a superhero for all that.
Yeah.
Like we saw this with the ACLU recently, right? When they changed her quotes for that Twitter thing, like, well, she probably, if she were around today, would have said it exactly the way we are thinking she said it. Like, what are you doing?
Right. Yeah.
And the context here, too, is that she had, you know, scores of Supreme Court clerks over her decades on the court. Only one was black throughout her entire tenure. And so,
right.
You know, when you elevate her to this Olympic place in the pantheon of civil rights leaders, then you have to then, you know, carve out what she actually says, because it's not right. going to match with, you know, what you've built up of her. So in some
right.
like in some ways, I think the caricature and the celebration of her, you know, created this unrealistic expectation that when she couldn't meet that unrealistic expectation because it's not who she is, then Kirk had to, edit it. So
edit
there was
it out, shit. Yeah. Right. I mean, I think she was obviously, you know, very good for gender stuff, but it's not that, you know, when you're a woman, and that's great. I think it's easier to be kind of like a champion for groups to which you belong. So we should be honest about her shortcomings when it comes to racial equality. You know, you don't get to be like, you don't get to be in that club just because you're good on gender issues.
Right.
And I
always thought.
Speaking of the deification of her, that whole keep planking thing always weirded me out. You know, that image of her doing planks?
Yeah.
And it was like, keep planking. I'm like, maybe she should deserve to rest, both in life and maybe not be on the Supreme Court anymore. That's the other thing. I mean, this is like the obsession with her, the cult of Ginsburg, probably, you know, hurt the left a lot. Like, she could have been replaced.
Oh, hugely.
She had the humility
to
be replaced. Instead, we have, you know, we have Trump's
Amy Coney Barrett.
Right. And I think that the cult of Ginsburg is what, you know, persuaded her to a significant degree to stay on the court. And I always thought, and Katie, you like getting inside the heads of resistance warriors. So tell me if you think this should work. I thought the better argument that people should have been making was, you know, why is this judge blocking the first black president from nominating a replacement for her? Like, why is she trying to push this off to a potential Republican instead?
Well, you know, maybe because for lots of people, these politics are about personal identification and how much someone's journey resonates with you and how much the most powerful woman, her journey, right? I mean, we saw this with Hillary Clinton. Again, it's like alleged feminists who I think sometimes were just more self-interested and projected their own stuff out there and really did, you know, the journey of Hillary Clinton or RBG resonated with them much more than the actual, like, daily reality of women who are not powerful. And that's always the big thing as a feminist, I think, that you should be grappling with and looking at, not the way, like, the most powerful of the most powerful, the creme de la creme of women are faring, but the way the powerless, anonymous, countless women are faring.
Katie, thanks for sharing your perspective on that.
Thank you.
And Ruth Conda forever.
Ruth Conda forever. Absolutely. Tomorrow on Rising, we have another great show planned for you all. Friends of the show, David Sirota, Adam Wren, and Kim Iverson are with us to discuss the news of the day. Plus, Team Rising will be back. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe so you don't miss any of our new videos. And we will see you all tomorrow. Ruth Conda forever, yes.
Ruth Conda forever.
That's what several of the people, Greg Gutfeld was only one in this, these clips, these string of clips, that said some positive things about cult of Trump, that they believe in freedom, they believe in free speech, and they believe in the right thing. But all those others comments were negative about. And then what was disappointing was Steve Hassan, who founded the Cult Awareness Network in Chicago way back, because he had been recruited into a cult, and his parents had to hire deprogrammers to get him out, and now he's ending up doing therapy work up in Massachusetts. Well, he wrote this cult of Trump, and so he's not really clued in. Steve Hassan, who he should be the leader in exposing what cults are really about. So what you could say is we have a cult of Aspen, the Aspen Institute cult. that Katie is subscribing to, being on the big commission about how to reorder our information, you know, that is totally propaganda front. That's all it is. But here we have the next clip, and it talks about what she's really, really about, you know what I mean, deprogramming us.
And the question is, how are we going to really almost deprogram these people who have signed up for the cult of Trump? The garbage that they are being fed 24/7 on the internet by their constituents, and yeah, they bought into this big lie. And the question is, how are we going to really almost deprogram these people who have signed up for the cult of Trump?
The Trumpist cult. And we have to be deprogrammed. Do you have any idea how we how we start that process, much less complete it?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a journalist. I certainly don't know how we can stop people. I know we can look to history, though.
We have to start seriously addressing the question of how to deprogram nearly 75 million Trumpists. This is not a trivial matter. This is not easy to do. I've said before, Trump will go, but the Trumpists will still be here. The Trumpism.
When I wrote the Cult of Trump book in 2019, I said, if he doesn't get reelected, there's going to be violence. Let's not forget Jim Jones and what happened when he was exposed. He ordered not only the killing of Congressman Leo Ryan, but his followers as well.
A retail strategy of convincing individuals that their views are misguided is just too time consuming. I had this caller to my show last week who said, David, I did it. I deprogrammed one Trumpist. And I said, yeah, well, how long did it take? And the guy said it took 3 hours. So as you can see, 3 hours times 75 million, that's a problem.
The Trump critic and Republican strategist John Weaver said the GOP is not a party anymore in the traditional sense. It's a cult.
So nearly half the country is a cult. That's weird. We'll call it America. In that cult, people believe in free thinking, truth, and justice. It's their way. I mean, usually a cult is defined as a smaller, extreme group that demands allegiance and secrecy, kind of like CNN.
If I had a real friend who was involved in a cult, which I feel it is cultish behavior, I must try to help them. So he lies to people, and they believe it. And so what is that? Cultish behavior, and I think a lot of people need to be deprogrammed right now before they cast their next ballot.
Well, it's hard to agree on solutions. The terrorist Trump must be defeated, must be destroyed, must be devoured at the ballot box. And then he and his enablers and his supporters and his collaborators and the Mike Lees and the William Barrs and the Sean Hannitys and the Mike Pences and the Rudy Giuliani's and the Kyle Rittenhouses and the Amy Coney Barretts must be prosecuted and convicted and removed from our society while we try to rebuild it.
Well, so much for deprogramming us. Well, I don't know if they're going to ever wake up. And the American public out there, they're onto this pandemic now, and they've got a lot of well-spoken, very credible MDs and DOs, and people are speaking up about this whole pandemic. So there is hope. And at the end of our program, up on our website, thesecrettruth.com, I'm going to reiterate the 21 articles that Fran Schur wrote about 9/11 truth, about the psychology problem barriers there. And I think we can apply those 21 articles to the problem that some people are having and not realizing what this pandemic is all about. So anyway, coming up next is the emergency broadcast that Alex did. We're only going to play 7-8 minutes of it, 10 minutes maybe. He just got back from vacation, and we're going to put that up, and then you go to his Infowars.com and listen to the whole emergency broadcast. But it's very important what he has to say.
Infowars is almost always way ahead of the curve. We are truly next year's news today. And we haven't dropped the ball on this one either. We're amongst the very first to be reporting it. But the fact that this information has been going on for months and that we are just now discovering it shows just how diabolical this globalist takeover is. We know, even USA Today admits it, that $53,000 extra is given to every hospital or medical group that intubates a patient, incentivizing them to send people home when they're first sick, to not give them antibiotics, not give them steroids, not give them ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine, so they become deathly ill, they come back, they put them on a ventilator, and then 92% of the time they end up dying. That's the CDC's, the federal government's own numbers. You've seen all the incentives to not give care and basically kill people. Well, why do you think they've been locking up all the hospitals and all of the nursing homes and bringing COVID patients in to get people sick and make them die, but not letting families in? Because this is all a eugenics depopulation operation. Well, now one of the last big pieces of the puzzle just fell into place. And our own Christy Lee interviewed some of the witnesses yesterday who've experienced it personally. And I looked up the federal guidelines, and lo and behold, it's there. There is not even a regulation or a law making federal employees take the vaccines. It's all a giant hoax. It's not a law for the general public as well. And so when FEMA workers are coming in to take over the hospitals, not because they're overwhelmed with COVID, but because hundreds of thousands of nurses have quit over the illegal mandate, they are telling the nurses and doctors they're replacing that they didn't take the shot, and it's their option, their choice. That is absolutely incredible. And it's right there in the fine print, in the paperwork on the CDC website. So think about that. They use the hospital groups, the corporations, to fire everybody outside of law, claiming they're following a federal law. And then the hospital groups get the billions of dollars of emergency funding when they say that the hospitals are overwhelmed because of COVID patients. They put that law in place last year. Over $100 billion is just sitting there waiting to be spent. And then they create the shortfall themselves by running out all the regular nurses and doctors and then bring in FEMA, which again begins to federalize not just what you've seen with the CDC trying to take over housing, but now the CDC taking over the hospital chains themselves. True fascism, ladies and gentlemen. So this is massive, massive, massive news. And the full report and the full interview is in the war room from Friday, October 15th, 2021 on band.video. We'll put the link in the description here of this emergency transmission. And here, ladies and gentlemen, is the Saturday evening emergency transmission in full. Spread this link now. That's how we fight back.
For years now, Justin Trudeau has been a loyal lapdog to the communist Chinese. While the people of Canada ceremoniously came together to condemn the CCP's Uyghur genocide, Trudeau's cabinet sent a single member on a Zoom call to officially abstain. When the president of Taiwan was set to be honored by the Halifax International Security Forum for standing strong against China's relentless pressure, the Trudeau administration threatened to end their funding if they went through with it. Trudeau invited the Communist Chinese military to conduct winter training in Canada in 2019, less than 200 miles from the U.S. border in upstate New York. The head of the Canadian military caught wind of it from the U.S. Pentagon and called it off, which upset Trudeau, whose chief concern was offending the CCP. Under Trudeau, Canada has been a big player in the COVID hoax. In early 2017, billionaire Barry Sherman, a huge supporter of Trudeau's Liberal Party, was under investigation for shady deals with Trudeau that could have resulted in his company, Apotex, the world's largest producer of hydroxychloroquine and Canada's biggest pharmaceutical company, being banned for 5 years from lobbying the government. Later that year, Sherman and his wife were found hung from railings around their indoor swimming pool, with markings from being beaten and tied by their wrists. It was officially ruled a suicide, and along with Sherman, the probe died. Apotex was able to continue doing business with Trudeau's government and went on to provide dangerous drugs as part of their ventilator protocol. And it was at the University of British Columbia where the lipid nanoparticles that make the mRNA shots possible were developed. Trudeau is a natural-born tyrant. After less than 30,000 deaths, 0.07% of the population, Justin Trudeau has announced that all federal employees, and everyone 12 or older traveling on planes, trains, and cruise ships need to be fully vaccinated. Testing negative will no longer be an option.
Testing will no longer be an option. These travel measures, along with mandatory vaccination for federal employees, are some of the strongest in the world. Because when it comes to keeping you and your family safe, when it comes to avoiding lockdowns for everyone, this is no time for half measures.
In Ontario, elected Representative Rick Nichols refused.
But under no circumstances will I, nor should any Ontarian, be forced or coerced to do something against their will.
And was fired. Under new health orders in Saskatchewan, the government may now enter into any building on any land without a warrant and seize property. And they are building isolation centers. Trudeau's government, like most governments in the West, is dragging their people into a hellish reality of forced experimental drugs and a social credit score to police every movement they make for the rest of their lives. The same reality coming to you and your family, so long as humanity does nothing to stop it. For InfoWars.com, this is Greg Reese.
We're coming to the end of our program. There's only a couple of minutes to go. But we are in big trouble. And it's taken since John Dewey, by the way, some would say that he's the father of American education. Well, he was a Trotskyite supporter early on. So he supported communism from way, way back. So it got seeded in, starting with him. Then they expanded it, through the school system, the universities. They started idealizing the ideology of crypto-Marxist thought, got embedded into our university system. And it took hold there, young people, and they started dissing, of course, capitalism. But the capitalists are behind bringing world communism about. You have to go back to Peterloo Massacre in the early 1800s, where the British Crown was threatened. They'd lost the colonies, and they were threatened by a large group in Manchester that had met. And that large group presented a threat to the crown, so they sent lancers in and killed dozens of people there. And out of that came the six acts, which prohibited the meeting of any group larger than five. It also gave the crown power to go in and search your residence for weapons, and it prohibited having weapons and so forth. So this draconian tyranny got started in the early 1800s in a real big way. And it has only grown and come across over here. The money power is behind it. And now the corporate, the big corporate, you know, marshaled by the World Economic Forum, is behind what our problems are right now. But I want to thank everyone out there for listening, and just don't give up hope. We've got to continue to fight this thing, and I'm going to fight to my last breath. I'm not giving up, and I'm going to stick with America first and America always. And let's hang in there and do what's right. Thank you. Good night.